Hello, welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Thursday, September 11th, 2025. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We begin the second hour by reading the obituaries. Today's list includes just two names, Rupert G. Lemons, 83, of Wickenburg, and Robert Carl Petty, 73, of Phoenix. Sun Sounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of the individuals listed in today's obituaries. And now we'll turn to the business section of the paper. The top of the page, the top article is Court Revives Trader Joe's Trademark Case. This was written by Jonathan Stemple for Reuters News Group. A federal appeals court on September 8th revived a Trader Joe's lawsuit accusing a fledgling employee union of trademark infringement for selling T-shirts, buttons, mugs, and reusable tote bags featuring the grocery chain's distinctive red typeface and logo. In a 3-0 decision, the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Pasadena, California, said that a trial judge was too quick to dismiss the lawsuit against Trader Joe's United, which said it was created in 2022 and has 4 local chapters. Circuit Judge Gabriel Sanchez said the strength of the Trader Joe's name, the chain's own sale of tote bags, and the strikingly similar marks featuring the same red color and similar fonts and concentric circles could confuse consumers. Sanchez wrote, quote, "This is not one of the rare trademark infringement cases in which there is no plausible likelihood that a reasonably prudent consumer would be confused," unquote. The September 8th decision reversed a January 2024 ruling by U.S. District Judge Hernan Vera in Los Angeles, and it returned the case to him. Vera called the union's use of Trader Joe's mark fair use and accused Trader Joe's of trying to weaponize the legal system by suing to gain advantage in a labor dispute. Trader Joe's disagreed, telling the appeal court that federal labor law protects many important union rights, including advocacy, organizing, and striking. But, quote, "Selling branded goods in commerce is not one of them," unquote. The union countered that no reasonable consumer would be confused by its tote bag, the only product that is sold by both parties. According to court papers, the Trader Joe's bag featured wine, fruit, cheese, and a cutting board. The union bag included a fist holding a box cutter and the word union. Trader Joe's is based in Monrovia, California, and has about 600 stores. The lawyers for the union did not immediately respond to requests for comment. Trader Joe's and its lawyers also did not immediately respond to similar requests. And that was the article entitled Court Revives Trader Joe's Trademark Case. Our second article from the business section, Cracker Barrel Backs Off Remodels, by Melina Kahn for the USA Today. Welcome back, eclectic wall designs, oil lamp fixtures, and wobbly wooden tables. Cracker Barrel will not remodel its restaurants after all. The country store and restaurant chain announced on September 9th that it is not moving forward with restaurant remodels, weeks after it reversed course on a logo change that sparked widespread controversy. Cracker Barrel said in a message on its website, quote, "You have shared your voices in recent weeks, not just on our logo, but also on our restaurants. We are continuing to listen. Today, we are suspending our remodels. If your restaurant hasn't been remodeled, you don't need to worry. It won't be," unquote. Cracker Barrel said it had only tested the remodel in 4 of its 660 locations. Nonetheless, the chain said it will make sure that all restaurants, quote, are in good shape and meet your expectations. They went on and said on their website, quote, with our recent announcement that our old-timer logo will remain, along with our bigger focus in the kitchen and on your plate, we hope that today's step reinforces that we hear you, unquote. The company had announced during its quarterly earnings call last March that it would be remodeling 25 locations and refreshing another 25 with an aim to attract younger crowds. According to a TikTok video Cracker Barrel posted last year, updated restaurants featured new lighting, decor, and tables and chairs. Instead of wall dividers covered with Southern-style decor, bookcases held a handful of items, highlighting the more open feel. Some commenters were quick to disapprove of the new, more modern redesign. One commenter said, quote, listen, if I can't struggle to read the trifold paper menu by the light of a kerosene lamp on my wobbly table in the most uncomfy wood chair, I don't want it. Another commenter wrote, quote, a swing and a miss. We eat here for a reason. I get what you tried. I don't want bright and open. I want Grandma's house back, unquote. Cracker Barrel's change of heart about its restaurant remodels came 2 weeks after a similar switch-up on its planned logo redesign. On August 19th, Cracker Barrel unveiled a new, simplified logo with the launch of a fall menu campaign that was called All the More. The logo still featured the company's classic gold and brown color palette, but it removed a man seated next to a wooden barrel. Some customers decried the logo change, with one Instagram commenter calling it cold and sterile. Meanwhile, some conservatives suggested the new logo was political. President Donald Trump also weighed in, writing in a Truth Social post that the chain could earn free publicity if it went back to its old logo. That same day as Trump's initial post, Cracker Barrel said it would drop the much-criticized new logo. And that was the article, Cracker Barrel Backs Off Remodels. The third article from the business page is Tesla's U.S. market share at its lowest since 2017. This was written by Abhirup Roy from Reuters News Group out of San Francisco. Tesla's U.S. market share dropped to a near 8-year low in August as buyers chose electric vehicles from a growing stable of rivals over the aging lineup offered by CEO Elon Musk company, according to data from research firm Cox Automotive, which was shared exclusively with Reuters. The decline highlights the threat from automakers ramping up EV incentives at a difficult time for the industry. Analysts expect an EV sales bump to continue through September in the United States and then drop when federal tax credits expire at the end of the month, raising financial pressure on Tesla and other automakers. Tesla, which once held more than 80% of the U.S. EV market, accounted for 38% of the total EV sales in the United States in August, the first time it has fallen below the 40% mark since October of 2017, and that was when it was ramping up production of the Model 3, its first mass-market car. Now, while other automakers are rolling out new EVs, Tesla has turned its focus to building robo-taxis and humanoid robots, delaying and canceling plans for cheaper electric vehicle models. Much of Tesla's trillion-dollar valuation hangs on that bet. The company's board on September 5th proposed an unprecedented $1 trillion pay package for Musk that, apart from other operational milestones, it's pegged to Tesla's value rising to $8.5 trillion over the next decade. For now, Tesla's core auto business remains its moneymaker. Its last new model was the Cybertruck pickup, that rolled out in 2023. With nothing of the success of its Model 3 midsize sedan or Model Y midsize SUV. Tesla has refreshed the Model Y, once the world's best-selling car, but the changes failed to live up to expectations, and Tesla is on track toward a second year of sales decline. Stephanie Valdez-Streety, Cox's Director of Industry Insights, said in an interview with Reuters, quote, "I know they are positioning themselves as a robotics AI company, but when you are a car company, when you don't have new products, your share will start to decline," unquote. Now, Cox has more complete data for July. That's when Tesla's market share fell to 42%, down from 48.7% the month prior in June. That drop was the sharpest since March 2021. That's around the time when Ford launched its Mustang Mach-E EV. Musk's right-wing political work and association with President Donald Trump also has hurt the brand. Musk helped guide Trump's efforts this year to downsize and reshape the U.S. government, but left the administration in May and had a falling out with the Republican president. Sales of new EVs jumped more than 24% month over month in July to 128,268. That's according to the Cox data. And that was driven by the looming end of the $7,500 tax credit for EVs. Tesla saw sales rise 7% to 53,816, even as its market share fell. In August, Tesla's growth slowed to 3.1%, and the broader market grew by 14%. For years, Tesla, as the market leader, was able to increase sales rapidly and command a premium price for its vehicles, allowing it to rake in profits. But with weakening sales and a host of competitors, Tesla has had to cut prices in recent years, squeezing its margins and worrying investors. The falling share reveals Tesla's increasingly difficult choice of supporting sales using higher profit-destroying incentives for buyers or maintaining profits and giving up market share. The July data showed rivals outgrowing Tesla. Hyundai, Honda, Kia, and Toyota rolled out higher incentives than Tesla and drove up EV sales between 60% and 120% and boosting their market share. Streety said, quote, "These legacy manufacturers are all benefiting from this sense of urgency, and they are able to have attractive offers for their vehicles, and it's working. I think we're going to continue to see this momentum through September," unquote. Competition against Tesla has turned fierce at EV dealer lots. While scouring for a car for everyday use in August, Tapajoy Biswas, a 41-year-old tech worker in the San Francisco Bay Area, was greeted with a range of deals, including zero down payment and zero interest rates from various EV dealers. Instead of the Toyota Camry that he initially was eyeing, he bought a Volkswagen ID.4. That's Volkswagen's competition to the Model Y. He was lured by an attractive lease price and an offer of free fast charging. Volkswagen sales rose more than 450% in July from the previous month. Biswas said, quote, "It felt like the deal of the market," unquote. And that was the article, Tesla's U.S. Market Share at Its Lowest Since 2017. We just passed 14 minutes past the hour. We're finished with the business page. Time to move on over to sports. From the front page of the sports section, there's a picture of ASU quarterback Sam Leavitt being tackled by a Mississippi State defender. And the title is ASU is Not Ready to Hit Panic Button on Leavitt. This was written by Michelle Gardner for the Arizona Republic. Arizona State sophomore quarterback Sam Leavitt is known for his work ethic and confidence. After a 24-20 upset at the hands of Mississippi State, it was business as usual for Leavitt and his teammates, who returned to the practice field to prepare for Texas State, who has a record of 2-0. ASU will host the Bobcats at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, September 13th at Mountain America Stadium. Leavitt is coming off the worst game of his still-young ASU career. He threw for just 82 yards and completed only 10 of 22 passes, with 2 interceptions and 1 touchdown. It marked only the second time that he had more turnovers than touchdown passes in a game. But there is no panic on the part of the player or his coaches. Leavitt said, quote, "I gotta have that confidence in myself. That's something that has never wavered within me. It's one game. I'm not tripping at all. There are a lot of things I gotta clean up. I did not play very well. I take a lot of things on myself that I have to do to get better. I have to fix my footwork, be more calm. A lot of the same things that I had to work on early in the season last year. So I'm just excited to go and work and do that." Unquote. Head coach Kenny Dillingham said Leavitt came in the next day with the same demeanor he always had. Coach Dillingham said, quote, "I think he's been great. He came in yesterday, he got to work. Everybody doesn't have great games every game. The dude is unbelievable. I wouldn't trade him for any other quarterback in the country. That's the quarterback I want to coach. That's the quarterback that I have complete faith in." Unquote. Leavitt, Dillingham, and his defensive coordinator, Brian Ward, accepted shares of the blame. Dillingham said one of the keys will be to get Leavitt in a rhythm early. Now, that was one of the problems against Mississippi State. 4 of ASU's first 5 drives ended with a punt, while an interception spelled the end of another drive, and 2 of those drives were 3-and-outs. Another drive was 4 plays, and another drive was 5 plays. So while ASU struggled in the opening half, it was able to find a groove in the second half. Its first drive of the third quarter consisted of 8 plays, all of them rushing attempts, and they covered 75 yards, with a 6-yard run by Kanye cutting the deficit to 17-10. The late go-ahead drive took 9 minutes and included 17 plays. Both offensive coordinator Marcus Arroyo and Dillingham said they're going to lean on that running game against Texas State. With Kyson Brown sidelined by a sprained ankle, Udo and Relik Brown will share the carries. Now for some odds and ends. A film crew from TNT spent part of the week filming the Sun Devils for a feature on its pregame show this week. Defensive lineman Justin Watley has returned to practice after missing the September 6th game. Running back Kyson Brown, wide receiver Jalen Moss, and defensive lineman Zach Swanson have not practiced. Swanson sustained a foot injury in the spring that required surgery. And that was the article by Michelle Gardner. ASU is not ready to hit panic button on Leavitt. Our second article from the front page of the sports section is entitled Mercury Face Liberty in WNBA Playoffs. This is by Jenna Ortiz for the Arizona Republic. The Phoenix Mercury will be facing the defending WNBA champion New York Liberty in the first round of the 2025 WNBA Playoffs. The Mercury's loss to the Los Angeles Sparks on September 9th put them out of reach of clinching the second or third seeds. The Liberty, with a record of 26-17, have locked up the fifth spot and cannot jump the Mercury in the standings due to the Mercury's record of 27-16, owning a 3-1 series win over them. Mercury coach Nate Tibbetts said, quote, "We're seeing the defending champs, and they are the champs until somebody else beats them. I think our group is excited, because once you get to the playoffs, you're going to get good teams no matter what. We put ourselves in position to host, which is great, but we know that there's a lot of work ahead of us, and they are a talented team." Unquote. So since the Mercury's upset against the Connecticut Sun on September 6th, the window began to close for the Mercury to earn a better seeding. The Liberty could not move higher than the fifth seed and began preparing for Phoenix at practice as early as Monday, September 8th. Mercury forward Alyssa Thomas said the team knew they would face the Liberty in the first round, and they have been preparing for them as well. Thomas said, quote, "They're really big, and clearly they are the reigning champs. For us, it's about playing our game. We got to look back at all the video over the four games that we played them. Last game, they weren't at full strength. For us, it's seeing what worked against them, and we've got to go out there with a great game." Unquote. Now, the Liberty have dealt with key injuries down the stretch, including the point guard Sabrina Ionescu, and forward Brianna Stewart, and forward Jonquel Jones. New York had a clear injury report on September 8th, marking the first time since May 22nd. The injuries did take a toll as the team debuted different rotations and were unable to find consistency, especially in their 80-63 loss to the Mercury back on August 30th. But Tibbetts is hopeful that the Liberty's healthy roster won't be able to knock his team out of the playoffs. Tibbetts joked and said, quote, "They have to deal with injuries, and it's not a lot of fun going in. Hopefully their rotations and confidence is a little messed up leading into the playoffs. No, we are going to see their best, and we want to see their best. That's what the playoffs bring. They've been dealing with it, and I'm sure it's not ideal, but this is where we are at, and they will be ready to go, just like we are ready to go." Unquote. The Mercury will host Game 1 against the Liberty on Sunday, September 14th at PHX Arena, but the time is yet to be determined. And that was the article, Mercury Face Liberty in WNBA Playoffs. Our next article from the front page of the sports section is about Arizona high school football. Can Hamilton keep rolling after a pair of blowout wins? This was written by Logan Stanley for the Arizona Republic. Hamilton is starting to feel like Hamilton again. After a couple of down seasons, at least by the high standards set by the program over the years, the Huskies look to be open division playoff contenders. A blowout win over ALA Queen Creek with a score of 63-20, which was an open playoff contender the last 2 years, and their win against Phoenix Sandra Day O'Connor, 62-14, have vaulted Hamilton to number 2 in the Republic's top 25 rankings. Their next play will be at Queen Creek Castile on September 12th at 7 p.m. Spearheading the Huskies' explosion on offense has been sophomore wide receiver Roy Oliver III, who turned in a box score last week, typically reserved only for video games. Oliver had 10 receptions for 220 yards and 6 touchdowns against O'Connor. Hamilton coach Travis Dixon said, quote, "The kid shows up and goes to work every day. The way he practices Monday through Thursday is remarkable. It's awesome to see the work he has put in come to fruition. But he's been the same guy since day one, lightning in a bottle. He is Big Play Roy." On the season, Oliver is up to 366 yards and 8 TDs on 17 receptions. Only 2 athletes in the state, and both of them are at 2A schools, have more receiving yards than Oliver so far. Coach Dixon said, quote, "We've kind of made him one-dimensional last year, but now we're moving him around and utilizing him in so many different ways because he has a skill set that can be unmatched at times." Oliver has been on a hot streak since emerging in his freshman season, breaking out in a pivotal game late in the year against Mesa Red Mountain. And now he's working his way up the class of 2028 rankings as a four-star recruit. It's been a fairly seamless transition at quarterback for Hamilton, with sophomore Jax Scully taking over for the graduated Rich Lucero Jr. Scully is 35 of 47 passing, with 624 yards, 11 TDs, and 2 interceptions. Coach Dixon said, "It starts with those guys up front. Those guys do a tremendous job making sure no one touches the quarterback. And Jax has done a great job composing himself. He's getting comfortable with the offense." So while those two are the headline grabbers, Dixon believes many parts of this team are coming together as one. It is the second season with Dixon at the helm of one of the most recognizable football programs in the state, as he tries to make his imprint. Dixon feels like this year is a mixture of talent melding with camaraderie. Coach said, quote, "It's not one individual. It's 11 guys working as one. I think they all feed off each other's success. They are happy for one another," unquote. So while Dixon is in year two, it is the first year for Coach Joe Bushman at Queen Creek Castile, following the departure of Bobby Newcomb, who's now coaching at Mesa Dobson. Bushman comes over from Lewis and Clark College in Portland, Oregon. He built himself up in the high school ranks in Oregon, leading Clackamas from 2005 to 2018. In his final 6 years there, he was 63-13, and he won a 6A state title in 2017 when he went 14-0, and it was the school's first ever state championship. He's adjusting pretty well to life in Arizona. Quote, "Always been a warm weather guy," unquote, and he appears to be set to hunker down for a while in the state. Bushman has been putting his stamp on the Colts since being hired in January. Bushman said, quote, "We have a different way that we like to do things. We're getting there. The analogy that I've made is it's 2 steps forward, 1 step back. As far as what we're trying to do behavior-wise, culture-wise, we're fighting some habits that don't sit well with me as far as work ethic goes. We're holding them accountable," unquote. Now, Castile has yet to play an in-state opponent this season. Their opener, a 52-14 win, was against Helix out of California, while last week's 31-13 loss came to Liberty from Nevada, which was one of that state's top teams. Bushman said, quote, "I'm still learning the landscape here, but I gotta believe they would be an open division contender. We played really hard with them for 3 quarters. We just made some catastrophic mistakes offensively to let the thing get away from us at the end. But I was impressed with how well our kids competed, especially on defense," unquote. Castile enters the game against Hamilton at less than full strength. The lone Division I signee on the roster, that would be senior offensive lineman Bryce Greer, who is an NAU commit, he's likely out for the season after getting injured against Liberty in the first quarter, and the Colts' starting center is out as well. Junior quarterback T. Smith, who transferred from Hamilton in the offseason, is out for the first 6 games of the season after his double appeal of the transfer rule was denied by the Arizona Interscholastic Association, and that has led to sophomore Gunnar Choi, who was the backup for Castile's freshman team last season, getting the nod. Bushman said, quote, "He was thrown to wolves for his second high school start. Things are happening fast for him right now," unquote. So with Bushman being new to Arizona, he has worked to understand the football hierarchy, but that is something that can also be used to his advantage. He does not have any preconceived notions about anybody. Bushman said, "I have a healthy respect for them, Hamilton. I like Coach Dixon." And that's the article, "Can Hamilton Keep Rolling After Pair of Blowout Wins?" The fourth article from the front page of the sports section is entitled, "Cardinals Secondary Flexes Its Talent in Week 1." This article was written by Theo Mackey for the Arizona Republic. Nick Rallis did not hesitate. It was August 1st, just the eighth day of Arizona Cardinals training camp, and their defensive coordinator was asked what the next step should look like for his young secondary. And already, he had a clear answer in mind. At the time, he said, quote, "It comes down to point of attack wins, ultimately. The job of the corner is to deny the ball," unquote. Now, in that regard, the earliest returns were an overwhelming success. Last season, the Cardinals averaged just 1.5 pass breakups per game, according to Pro Football Focus. Their season high last year was 4 in one game. But last Sunday, in New Orleans, they broke up 7 passes. The product was a foiled Saints passing attack. All offseason, the attention was on the Cardinals' remade pass rush, with 3 key additions in free agency. To mitigate that threat, the Saints' game plan focused on quick passing. Spencer Rattler, their quarterback, averaged 2.38 seconds to throw, the third lowest number in the league in Week 1. Last year, that type of quick passing game was a nightmare for the Cardinals. When opposing quarterbacks who threw in under 2.5 seconds, the Cardinals allowed 7.3 yards per attempt, which was the second worst mark in the league. But when Rattler threw in under 2.5 seconds last week in Week 1, he was 20 of 30 for 152 yards, which is a mere 5.1 yards per attempt. Over a full season last year, that would have been the league's best mark. And it is a testament to the performance of the Cardinals' secondary. Cornerback Max Melton said, quote, "Ball came out fast, knew it was coming out fast. We had a couple coverages, depending on that. We just reacted to it when we saw it and made some plays," unquote. Now, understandably, rookie Will Johnson earned the bulk of the attention during the offseason. Widely considered a top-10 talent, he fell to the second round of the draft due to injury concerns. The Cardinals snapped him up, and for much of training camp, he looked every bit of the talent that he was projected to be. But it's not just Johnson who raises the ceiling for this secondary. Garrett Williams, their nickel, is now in his third season after establishing himself as a key piece player last year. The Cardinals have expanded his role so that he can play on every snap, as he did against the Saints. Melton is in his second year after an encouraging second half of his rookie season. Safety Dadrian Taylor-Demerson is also entering year two with an expanded role. The Cardinals are leaning further into looks with 6 defensive backs to get him on the field more. Now, all of it came to fruition last week in Week 1. Oh yes, there are caveats here. New Orleans might have been the league's least explosive passing game. The test will get harder from here, starting with the Carolina Panthers next Sunday, September 14th. Even if Bryce Young has been inconsistent throughout his NFL career, he poses danger that quarterback Rattler doesn't. And in rookie receiver Tetaroa McMillan, the Panthers now have a physically imposing downfield weapon, whom Jonathan Gannon said the Cardinals liked a lot in the draft process. But even when adjusting for the level of opponent, the opener was encouraging. Johnson, as he was all offseason, was the central talking point post-game. He showed his ball skills, tracking down a deep interception that was overturned by an illegal contact penalty against Melton. Melton said, quote, "When my mans catch a pick and you call that man, I can't even say what I want to say," unquote. Johnson also showed his intelligence, recognized a look from film study to blow up Chris Olave behind the line of scrimmage on a screen pass. And his recognition was on display with 2 pass breakups, which was the most on the team. Rallis said, quote, "You're able to see his preparation get put to work. really made a lot of intelligent plays out there just because of his study and the way he practiced, unquote. Melton, too, impressed. The Saints targeted him 10 times, but he allowed just 5 catches. Only 2 of those were downfield. 1 came against Olave, who seemed to push off at the top of his route. The other was a mistake that Melton still lamented days later, as he allowed Rashid Shaheed to get up on open on a comeback route. But Melton responded well, forcing 2 incompletions on similar routes late in the game. The Cardinals altered how they defend those routes this season, having cornerbacks stay square to the receiver rather than immediately getting into a crossover running style. And in the open, Melton proved to be a quick learner. Coach Gannon said, quote, "He played really well. At the point of attack, he was really good. I thought his eyes were good most of the day. Technique was pretty good most of the day. He made a bunch of plays for us," unquote. And then there was the impact of the Cardinals' new looks. They used dime coverage, plays with 6 defensive backs on 32 plays. That's nearly twice as many as the next most in the league last week. Against those looks, Rattler finished with just 4.5 yards per attempt. The downside is that those plays can leave defenses susceptible against the run, as they sacrifice a linebacker for a safety. But Rallis timed them well. The Saints called only 4 designed runs on 32 plays against dime, gaining 24 yards. Rallis said, quote, "It was good. When you've got guys that can help you win games, I like to get those guys on the field. So I thought it was a healthy rotation of a lot of good players," unquote. Now this, of course, was just 1 test out of 17. But the Saints tried to mitigate the Cardinals' pass rush by instead picking on their secondary. Through its personnel and its coverages, Arizona showed that task may not be so easy this season. And that was the article, "Cardinals' Secondary Flexes Its Talent in Week 1. We're going to turn the front page of the sports section over and take a look at some articles inside. I think we have time for one more. How about some baseball news? D-backs miss chance to gain ground in playoff race. The Diamondbacks fell behind early and never recovered, losing 5-3 to the San Francisco Giants on Tuesday night, September 9th, at Oracle Park, dealing another blow to their dwindling playoff hopes. The loss extended their skid to 3 games at a time when nearly every game feels like a must-win. All 3 days, the Diamondbacks missed chances to gain ground on the New York Mets in the race for the final National League wild card spot. They remain 4.5 games out. The Giants, however, continue to make a strong push. They are 2 games back of the Mets. The Diamondbacks were down 3-0 after just 3 batters in the bottom of the first inning. Right-hander Zach Gallen issued walks to Helio Ramos and Rafael Devers to open the inning. Gallen deserves some slack on the first walk. Home plate umpire Doug Eddings missed a call on the 3-2 pitch to Ramos, and Willie Adams followed with a 3-run homer. The Diamondbacks played from behind the rest of the night. They made Giants lefty Robbie Ray work, chasing him from the game after 5 innings and 95 pitches. Then they mounted a rally against the Giants lefty Matt Gage in the 6th, getting hits from 3 of the first 4 hitters of the inning to score a run, cutting the lead to 5-3. But with runners on 2nd and 3rd and 1 out, the Giants went to rookie reliever Joel Piguero, who struck out Tim Tawa and Adrian Del Castillo to extinguish the threat. The Diamondbacks made noise again in the 9th, but came up empty-handed. After the first 2 batters reached, the Diamondbacks sent pitch hitter Connor Kizer to the plate to bunt the runners over. But Kizer popped it up, and the Giants got a force out at 3rd for the first out of the inning. Pinch hitter Alec Thomas popped out, and Ketel Marte grounded out to end the game. Aside from being well back of the Mets, The Diamondbacks now find themselves 1.5 games back of the Cincinnati Reds and 2.5 games behind the Giants. The Diamondbacks have the same record as the St. Louis Cardinals. Both teams are 72 wins and 74 losses. And that's the article, D-backs miss chance to gain ground in playoff race. Our next article is entitled, In-Season Tournament Coming for Flag Football. This is by Logan Stanley for the Arizona Republic. The next step in the evolution of high school flag football in Arizona is here. The Fiesta Sports Foundation announced the creation of an in-season tournament called the Fiesta Bowl Copper State Invitational on September 10th, the first of its kind. The state's top teams across the 6A and 5A conferences, including both defending state champions, will come together for one tournament. Chandler Hamilton, the 6A state champions, and Waddell Canyon View, the 5A champions, headline the tournament. The tournament will feature pool play, with the top two teams from each bracket advancing to a single elimination playoff, and it will be held October 9th and 11th at Arizona State University Recreation and Sports Field at Dorsey. The addition of an in-season tournament comes as flag football enters its third season of being a sanctioned Arizona Interscholastic Association sport. A fourth conference, 3A, is being added this season to accommodate the rising number of schools that now have flag football. Fiesta Sports Foundation Executive Director and CEO Eric Moses said in a press release, quote, "We want Fiesta Sports Foundation to be synonymous with promoting youth sports in Arizona, and girls flag football is one of the fastest growing youth sports across the country. Creating the Fiesta Bowl Copper State Invitational provides a tournament-style experience that players always enjoy. Bringing some of the state's best teams and players to one location builds a festival environment that highlights great matchups and overall competition in this sport," unquote. Matt Stone, the head coach at Hamilton and one of the driving forces in getting flag football sanctioned by the AIA, has watched it go from being an annual single powder puff game to then the state body recognizing it to the sport having four conferences and 135 total schools participating, and now they have an in-season tournament. Stone told the Republic, quote, "The Fiesta Bowl Copper State Invitational is a significant step forward for our sport. It will not only bring together some of the best teams across divisions in Arizona, but in future years, we hope that this invitational can attract the top out-of-state teams from places like California, Colorado, and elsewhere," unquote. Well, the first matchup will be at 2 p.m. on October 9th, with Hamilton facing the 4A runner-up Prescott. Pool play will continue on October 9th and the morning of October 11th. Championship begins at 5:15 p.m. And that was the article entitled, In-Season Tournament Coming for Flag Football. Our last article from the sports section, Cardinals Climb Coming to State Farm Stadium, written by Jose M. Romero for the Arizona Republic. State Farm Stadium in Glendale will be transformed into a hiker's paradise for one day, and the public is invited to experience Cardinals Climb for a worthy cause. The Arizona Cardinals Foundation on Thursday, September 11th, announced the launch of the first ever Cardinals Climb, a community fundraising event dedicated to supporting the special needs community. On Saturday, February 21st, 2026, State Farm Stadium will become an immersive climbing and hiking experience, bringing together fans, families, corporate teams, and community groups to climb for a cause. The event will raise funds for organizations that lead innovative and transformative work to assist individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The Cardinals were looking for a major fundraiser to put on their newly renamed charitable arm, the Arizona Cardinals Foundation, specific to a cause. That cause became People with Special Needs, and Cardinals Climb was born. Cardinals owner Michael Bidwill told the Arizona Republic, quote, "There are members of our organization, front off, players and otherwise, who have family members with special needs, and we felt like this was something personal that we could really make a difference in terms of raising money, but also education and awareness. And so we felt like, let's do something that's a super unique and truly Arizona fundraiser. And we thought, there's nothing like hiking in Arizona," unquote. The Cardinals Climb setup at State Farm Stadium will include 4 hiking trails that vary in level of difficulty, including an accessible trail, a family trail, a moderate trail, and an advanced trail, which involves navigating stadium stairwells and decor. No trail will intersect until the end of the route at the 50-yard line. And after the climb, an outdoor concert is planned for the Great Lawn in celebration of those who reached or surpassed their fundraising goals. Cardinals Climb will be promoted at home games beginning this Sunday, September 14th, when the Cardinals host the Carolina Panthers. Cardinals players, such as star tight end Trey McBride, look forward to seeing the stadium turned into an Arizona hiking scene. McBride said, quote, "This is something I wanted to be a part of from the get-go and help with special needs in any way I can. Growing up, I volunteered at special needs stuff, helped with Special Olympics and a lot of other things there in Colorado, so this is something that's near and dear, but really just kind of getting out there and helping in the community in any way that I can. I think this is a huge part of it, and I think this will be a huge success here in Arizona," unquote. Individuals can get involved in several ways as climb leaders who will recruit and create teams of participants and raise funds together, as team members in support of friends, colleagues, and organizations, or as participants from afar if not able to attend, and as individual donors without climbing or hiking. The registration begins Thursday, September 11th at the website cardinalsclimb.com. Signing up will guide registrants through the fundraising process. And all proceeds from Cardinals Climb will directly benefit local organizations doing progressive work in special needs. 4 of the 5 lead beneficiaries are the Barrow Neurological Foundation, the Southwest Autism Research and Resource Center, Special Olympics Arizona, and Treasure House. And that was the article entitled, Cardinals Climb, Coming to State Farm Stadium. Well, we're coming up on 48 minutes past the hour. Let's move on over to the entertainment section and begin by reading today's horoscopes. We begin with the sign of Aries, birth dates from March 21st to April 19th. Are you feeling centered and secure? The Moon and Mercury harmonize tonight. It is a good time for budget balancing and paying bills. For Taurus, birth dates from April 20th to May 20th, are you giving off good vibes? You are in a social mood as the Moon and Mercury harmonize. Even strangers enjoy your company. For Geminis, birth dates from May 21st to June 21st, are you encouraging them to open up? You intuitively know how to get a shy person talking as the Moon meets Mercury. For Cancer, birth dates from June 22nd through July 22nd. Are you helping a friend in distress? They need your support. Make time to counsel them. For Leos, birth dates from July 23rd through August 22nd. Do you have career matters on your mind? Well, as the Moon and Mercury harmonize, brainstorm ways to promote yourself professionally. For you fellow Virgos out there, birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, clear your schedule to explore what is possible. Your optimistic attitude is an asset. For Libras, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, are you having potent dreams? Record them as soon as you wake up. They may foreshadow the day's events. For Scorpios, October 24th through November 21st birth dates, are you helping others find their voice? You are eager to hear what a friend or partner has to say today. For Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birth dates, are you making yourself an asset at the office? As the Moon and Mercury harmonize, you see solutions that others cannot. For Capricorns, December 22nd through January 19th birth dates, do you have good news to share? Spend the evening with friends as the Moon and Mercury harmonize. For Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th birth dates, are your anxieties diminishing? As the Moon and Mercury connect, seeing the truth of a matter will put you at ease. And finally, Pisces, birth dates from February 19th to March 20th. Are you acting as a mediator? Siblings or neighborhood acquaintances ask you to moderate a dispute. Those were today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. The first letter goes like this. Dear Abby, my husband and I walk around a local lake 3 times a week. We met another couple there who seemed pleasant until the husband tried to give me his doctor's name so I could get that thing removed. Well, that thing being the beauty mark next to my smile. I told him I wasn't interested. Well, the next time we met, he brought it up again. The third time he raised the subject, he told me most people would get mad at him for his advice, but you're tough, you can take it. The last 3 times we've run into them, he has questioned my body language. What's going on with your hands? Why are you doing that with your fingers? Well, look at you. You look like you're ready to strangle me. Or he'll comment on my clothing, saying, what are those, socks? Abby, I'm not thin-skinned, but I've had enough. This guy smiles and laughs, amusing himself while making me uncomfortable. I've begun to walk past the couple while smiling and wishing them a pleasant day. Yesterday, the man called out, stop. I continued, but my husband paused to talk. I find the man to be obnoxious, but he clearly thinks I'm the one with bad behavior. I see this escalating into a real problem, and I'd like to avoid trouble. The only way to quietly solve this is to find somewhere else to walk in the morning. My husband disagrees. What's the best way to handle this? I no longer look forward to our morning walks. Signed, Avoiding in California. And Abby responds, dear Avoiding, you are not the bad guy. Frankly, the man seems a little off. You're not required to interact with anyone who makes you uncomfortable. If your husband wants to chat with him, he should do it when you are not present. If he is not sensitive enough to recognize that, you should keep walking or find another route. Our next letter goes, dear Abby, my husband and I are in our 70s. We are in reasonably good shape, but that said, I have hip replacements and my knees and hips have become sore from the stairs that I must climb every day. We have a lovely large home, but I know it's time to move to senior living, like my many friends who are making the transition now. My husband ignores my entreaties. Every time he retorts and says, I will leave this house only feet first. And that's every time when I say the stairs are too much for me. Abby, I bring my clothes downstairs in a bag every day to avoid another climb. I am making every accommodation I can, and am now considering divorce as an option. The bottom line is, my husband is a selfish old man. Every social group he belongs to and the beautiful home he refuses to leave have all been my doing. I have also been an equal breadwinner. Forget counseling. He has a counseling degree. Do you have any advice? Signed, End of My Rope in Michigan. And Abby responds, dear End, I sure do. And it's going to cost your selfish husband a bundle. Start pricing stair chair lifts or small elevators for your lovely large home. If your husband is reluctant, point out that it will be cheaper than a divorce. And those were the letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. I think we have time for a comic, maybe two. We have Beetle Bailey, drawn by Greg Bryan and Neil Walker. In the first frame, a couple of the privates are talking, and one of them says, "Beetle loves the new electric Jeep." And the other one says, "Why?" And in the second frame, the first private says, "Well, he gets to snooze while it charges." And there's the Jeep plugged into the electric charger, and Beetle is sitting on the ground, leaning on the back of the Jeep, taking a nap. And that was Beetle Bailey. Then we have Peanuts, drawn by Charles Schultz. And Lucy is talking to Snoopy, and Snoopy's laying on top of his doghouse. And she says, "You think everyone is curious, don't you? Well, I'm not. Who cares why you're carving notches into your stupid doghouse? I sure don't. I couldn't care less." And then the last frame, she climbs up on the doghouse and says, "Oh, please, tell me." And that was Peanuts. Well, it's time for us to wish happy birthday to some celebrities who are celebrating today. I wonder who they are. Let's see. We have comedian Tom Dreesen turns 86. Movie director Brian De Palma turns 85. Actress Lola Falana turns 83. The drummer Mickey Hart with the group Grateful Dead, he turns 82. Actress Amy Madigan turns 75. Drummer John Moss with Culture Club, he turns 68. Actress Christy McNichol turns 63. And singer Harry Connick Jr. turns 58. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sunsounds of Arizona. You have been listening to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Thursday, September 11th, 2025. Have a great day.